And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 825. We're building a draft roadmap. We've entered February. DCs are still going strong, don't get me wrong, but it feels like it's time to start talking snakes. It's auctions. It's fab time. So we're going to talk building a draft roadmap. In order to help me do so, it's a friend of mine, a friend of the show, my co-host. We talked last week about some projections, and that was very eye-opening to me. Hopefully others enjoyed that process. And now we're going to talk to him about an article he wrote over a month ago for the Bubba and the Boom Patreon. If you want to go check that out, it's all about building a draft roadmap. And he used his really well done main event team's draft roadmap that he put together. You can find him on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. How are we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, Bubba. Yeah, it's you mentioned the transition phase, and I was telling you, I'm starting to make like a new worksheet that's going to be like revamped with projected rosters, lineups, pitching staffs. Just kind of go through roster resources again, get like a clean slate, and then start just tweaking my rankings. I think my rankings are pretty good for Fab because there's a difference. You can kind of reorganize players based on DCs a little bit more than you would in Fabs. So probably go a little more safety. So yeah, trying to get that mindset, and this is going to help get me there, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to start moving directions. I know everyone gets annoyed. I do it on like all my shows now. I start talking about my brain's more auction than snake, it feels like, but everything changes. But yeah, building these roadmaps, game planning, all that kind of stuff is something we need to start doing as we're getting into the crunch side. Like, because before you know it, March will be really ramping up. You know, we have listener league drafts. Your first one, I think, is the 15th, right? Sunday the 15th. You have draft one, I think, for Bubba and the Bloom. So yeah, it's less than 2 weeks away if you really want to break it down. So we are not far away from really getting after it. So talk to game plan and see where things go. Before we get to that, let's talk some news and notes. Ben, Eugenio Suarez over the weekend signed with the Cincinnati Reds, returning to where it once all began, it felt like, for Eugenio. Coming off 49 home runs last year, 30 the year before, not a big average bat. What are your thoughts on this move as it shuffles a lot of things around in that Reds lineup?
It does. I think it's arguably the best spot for him to land, Suarez. He did dominate here before he left for the Mariners and whoever else he played for, the Diamondbacks between then and now. And it's more of a, what's the collateral damage to the other players is kind of where my head's at. And according to Roster Resource, the one who takes the biggest hit is Spencer Steer. He projects on the bench. It seems like the Reds really want Sal Stewart to play. I hope that is the case because I'm a fan of what Sal Stewart could do. I know you are as well. We talked about him on a projection show. I think it was the Oopsie show. He kind of stands out, especially Seamer 600, Sal Stewart. So I was already kind of out on Steer. And the other guy I'm worried about too is Noel V. Marte, maybe. Honestly, it should be J.J. Bleday who sits, but he's their second lefty in the lineup besides Will Benson, who's projected to be on the bench for the Reds. So I don't know. I was already hesitant to draft Steer, and even though I kind of like Marte, his appeal, it seemed kind of risky for a DC. So I just think the Suarez signing this kind of makes me want to draft Marte and Steer less than I already did. So that's kind of like the biggest takeaway. And it actually makes me want to draft Suarez more because I haven't drafted Suarez yet. But I think if I have a good enough average base, maybe it's worth taking the gamble. But the average is really has had me concerned in drafts so far.
Yes, the average is uber important, as we'll kind of talk about that with road mapping here. But with Suarez, outside like one or two seasons, he's pretty much been a drain to your batting average, and that is a big thing. But he used to also go way later in drafts. Now, over the last 7 days in DCs, his ADP is like 130. So you definitely have to pay the price for him. He's going right after like a Jordan Westberg, if we're talking third basemans, about 5 picks after Bregman. So he's in that little pocket of third baseman, definitely the worst of the average of the three, but definitely I would be willing to say the more power than the three. So yeah, it's all about roster build to your point. And for those that are wondering how the playing time plays out, again, everyone is speculating right now, but I just earlier today recorded the Reds preview with Jeff Erickson. That'll drop on Tuesday for Bench with Bubba, episode 826. And he broke down a lot of things that makes a lot of sense. And, of course, he listens to a lot of the beat writers, so it checked out. But he feels Sal Stewart will play first. He feels Brian Hayes will play third, and that Suarez will DH. And that's kind of the way the cookies crumble for the most part. There might be days off here and there. Steer's going to go to the outfield and be a utility guy. And then Marte will do his thing until either he stops playing any semblance of defense or doesn't hit. But sadly, Bleday / Benson will probably play a lot because – The one thing I didn't notice, Ben, until Jeff mentioned it, is if you look at roster resource, very heavy right-handed team. Very heavy right-handed team. That's why they bring in like the Bleds and Bensons of the world, because it's basically TJ Friedel and a whole lot of righties in that lineup. So it you need those extra lefties out there, unfortunately. And that, to the dismay, as you said, Bleds should be sitting and stuff. Probably not going to happen as much as you, me, or others might like. So something to keep an eye on.
He's a decent target in DCs for that reason, Bleds.
Yep, he definitely is. I have him queued up in the one we're in right now, Bleds and Benson even. Because like even Benson, it's like if Bleds gets hurt, then it's Benson's turn. So it's just one of those, like, as your, you know, depth outfield pieces, and this is what DCs do. You start looking at this kind of stuff, and here we are. All right, a move that took place earlier today, a trade, a three-way trade. And, three-way trade between the Mariners, the Cardinals, and the Tampa Bay Rays. Just come to hang out, it seems like. But the trade looks like this. The Mariners receive Brendan Donovan. So let's just start there. We'll go team by team, Ben, before we start throwing names all over the board. Brendan Donovan goes from St. Louis. We knew he's been rumored to be traded for quite a while. Seattle wasn't really on my bingo card for Donovan, but I felt like it feels like the second they lost out on Suarez, like, here we go, let's get Brendan Donovan. Donovan's ADP is about 290 over the last 7 days. Rumors have it he'll play third base for this team. We'll see where that goes. And that's because Ben Williamson, teaser alert, went to Tampa Bay in this trade. But what are your thoughts on Donovan going to Seattle, likely leading off for a pretty potent offense?
I probably like him a little bit more than I did with St. Louis. The only thing with Donovan is his profile. He's kind of like Luis Arraez, but a little more power. I don't even know if he has a little more power than Arraez. I think Arraez was close to 10-10 the 1 year. And Donovan, like, he has a good average, but I think it's a good comparison. So if you're, it depends on how you feel about the two of them. One good thing for Donovan, though, is I think he's going to get third base eligibility now, it seems like. And I hope that's the case, because an hour before the trade was announced, I drafted Cole Young for like the third time across my six DCs. And it seems like roster resource agrees that Cole Young will still be the starting second baseman. And even after I noticed that, so the trade I posted in your Discord, the player note for Cole Young, and it was saying, this is December, of course, so things can change, but it seemed like no matter what happens, he was going to play second for them. So hopefully that's the case. They stay true to their word. Cole Young has a pretty good upside based on his minor league numbers, but I think it's good for Donovan too, because he's going to hit leadoff. He was probably more of a middle of the lineup bat for the Cardinals. So this will help his plate appearances, just because the Mariners should score more than the Cardinals to go through the lineup more. It's really good for points leagues, probably, because he has a good OPS. It was almost 760 last year for Donovan. So I haven't drafted him yet, because I kind of mentioned how I view him kind of like Arraez, who I don't really want all that much. But I think definitely boosts his value up. And luckily, I was never in on Williamson. I didn't really trust the skills and the role either, probably. So no harm there. But I think definitely a little bit of a boost up for Donovan's value.
Yeah, I'd say definitely a boost for Donovan. Like, as much, who knows, like, I don't think the power's ever going to be there, to your point. But he's got at least 10 homers in 3 straight years. Like, that's better than Arraez in my mind. But he doesn't run that a ton. He doesn't hit, like, Arraez at least hits 300. It's a safe comp, especially, you know, considering their skill sets. I'd rather have Donovan than Arraez, because I think he has a little more, plus that offense should be really strong, especially the top half of it for Seattle. But I think it's almost, you know, two-thirds to three-quarters deep on that team. I like that setup quite a bit. So, yeah, I think it's a really good move for Donovan, obviously. It's great for Seattle. Gives them all the little things they need. We'll quickly hit on the Rays. I don't think this has a whole lot to do with it, but they get Williamson in this deal, Ben Williamson. And they currently had Junior Caminero, obviously, playing third base. I don't know if you guys heard of him before. So Ben Williamson seems just like a casualty of the situation. I was just like, hey, Seattle needs room here. Ben Williamson is young, though, so that's why I'm going to give him my 2 cents on this, because I actually wrote about him less than 24 hours ago. Or actually, him I wrote about a couple weeks ago. But Williamson has speed. We've seen 15 to 20 steals in the minors. Not a ton of pop, decent batting average. So it's kind of like a reverse Brendan Donovan in a weird way. But I don't, obviously not as good. But again, he's really young still. He's 25, so maybe there's more to Ben Williamson. Who knows? I'm not going to go out and pick him up anywhere, but just throwing that out there. I don't know if you have anything on Ben Williamson.
Not really. He's projected the platoon with the Rays, so now they have three platoons with Gavin Lux. I don't know about Chandler Simpson and then Jake Fraley per roster resource. I wonder if this is gonna hurt Aranda too. I don't know if Williamson can play first base or not, or
Good question. Good point.
Yandy can play first and then Williamson plays somewhere. I don't know. Maybe it hurts Aranda because now they have another right-handed bat on the bench. I think part of the Rays' problem going into the trade was they didn't have a lot of platoon companions for their left-handed hitters on the bench, but now they have three. I'm not gonna say anything like for certain, but there's just a possibility that the Rays lefties that we were hoping would not platoon, that maybe they do platoon more than we were expecting.
Yeah, it feels that way. You just add another bat there. It's like it's the perfect Ray. I'll say that much. He fits the role of being a Tampa Bay Ray, which is never good for fantasy baseball. Now the St. Louis Cardinals have been trading everybody under the sun, but they've been very open about their rebuilding. So they're doing that. They're not lying. They've done that. They still might not be done. Watching you, Burleson and others, like everybody just rent right now. Don't sign a month-to-month rents is your best case scenario if you're a St. Louis Cardinal. The Cardinals, they got the 2024 first-round pick from the Seattle Mariners, Gerangelo Sanjay, according to that's Martin Sokolsky. I think I got that right. He tried to give me a heads up. Ty Pete, Colton Ledbetter, who people were pretty much about, and a compensatory B-round draft pick. So that's a pretty sweet haul, it feels like. I know Donovan, he's got years of I believe he's got years of control. He's like $6 million this year, super cheap. So I get he's going to come at a premium, but that seems like a decent haul for a team trying to rebuild. I can't tell you anything about them because I don't know prospects, but didn't know if you have anything on this or how losing Donovan in St. Louis affects that situation.
I see two big winners. One I drafted in our DC, and that's Nolan Gorman. He not only moves up in the lineup, but I think his PT is safe at third base. It should be at least. If you can afford the average, what he's more of a bench bat anyway, where he's going, Gorman. So just kind of like a plug and play if he gets really hot. And he's dual eligibility on NFBC, second and third, which is really nice. But this is a big win for JJ Weatherholt because now he projects to be the second baseman for the Cardinals. And I think people were drafting him kind of hoping that he would be up at some point, but I think his ADP probably goes up. It feels like he should go. Well, I know McGonagall is a better prospect. When is McGon No, who's the one on the Griffin's a better prospect?
Griffin's a better prospect, yeah.
Yeah, there's too many top shortstop prospects. So I feel like the PT for Weatherholt's the safest now of those three that I mentioned by mistake. So Griffin, McGonagall, Weatherholt. I think Weatherholt's the safest to start the year in the majors, probably. And then I don't, but like I said, his ADP isn't the highest of the three. I think it's second right now in DCs. So pretty good buy, I think. If you're still drafting DCs or in any league, he's valuable to draft Weatherholt. But the last thing I'll say is that they're gonna be bad, the Cardinals. They have
Really bad.
their rotation is horrible and
Yep.
the lineup is very thin. So I don't normally bet MLB futures, but I feel like the Cardinals under would be a pretty good bet to take right now.
If you guys want pure entertainment, I believe it comes out Friday. I'm recording it later this week. I don't know if it's what day it releases, but I will be recording my Cardinals preview with Matt Thompson. That's like he's never held back to begin with. This is when the team was like contending for divisions. Should be a great show. That's all I'm gonna say. Should be really good, like popcorn ready, good stuff on that one. I recommend checking that one out. To your point, Connor Griffin's ADP is about 192. Weatherholt sitting around 273, and McGonagall is 310. So I'm with you. Weatherholt's been the guy I've liked the whole time, anyways, just because it felt like he was going to play third or second with the Gorman situation, vice versa. I like Weatherholt's, they say availability is the best ability. So he seems like the first one to get a chance, even though Griffin might be the stud you're all looking for. Well, you mentioned Luis Arraez enough, so looking forward to hearing your thoughts here. The Giants signed Luis Arraez to a one-year deal. Not sure why. Real not pumped on it at all. Luis Arraez, ADP's 286, Ben. No shares in my books. What are your thoughts on Luis Arraez joining the Giants? Because as a Giants fan, maybe there's fantasy goodness. I don't know. As a fan, I hate everything about this.
Well, Bubba, I'll give you a little confidence boost. I think he's normally like, so his career OPS is almost 780, which I think you'll take. His career on base percentage is 363, which is definitely
Definitely take that.
it works. So I know for fantasy we hate him, Arias, for the most part. We don't hate him, but we try to avoid him in builds.
Doesn't do anything for us, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was 8-11 last year, so I was kind of close with the 10-10. I was close, but
it's sad when 8-11. We're like, yeah,
yeah, I was kind of yeah, it's, yeah, yay. Well, he has to hit like 320 though for it to really matter. But
exactly.
The only reason I drafted Arias in one of my DCs is because I got him past pick 400. Yes, that's correct. I got him past pick 400. So at that point, I'm like, I have to take him.
Yeah.
And fair. So this is, I think, a pretty good thing. He's going to be a late, he projects to be a leadoff hitter for the Giants. But this annoys me, I will say, though, because I like the prospects of Casey Schmidt, and now he lost a starting spot. So unless there's a injury for the Giants or Eldridge just stinks, which I just took in our DC, so hopefully that's not necessarily the case. You know, I have more Schmidt shares.
Good Lord.
I liked his barrel rate Schmidt and some other things. He looked like he was going to be – he had some upside to him, but now that's kind of squashed. So we'll see, but I think – I don't know. It should work out for the Giants. Like I said, his on-base rises is pretty good for his career, and that's kind of what you want from the leadoff hitter. So I think it'll be fine, but for fantasy, not much of a change.
Yeah, I had this conversation with some other people. Like, Arise, real life, we know how the ability he has, but I've told friends and everything that are excited about it, I say, it's fine. He needs to hit, like, 315 or better to pay off, because power in that ballpark, like, 8 would be amazing, I think. Like, that's going to be tough for him in that yard. His defense is horrible. Like, that's one thing I really don't like. We're building this pitching staff that's built on contact, and you put Devers and Arise next to each other. It doesn't bode well on the right side of the infield. So that's why, as a Giants fan, I'm just wondering, like, what are we doing right now? And the rumor for Framber Valdez, Ben, did you know he's a heavy ground ball pitcher too? Because that's pretty cool stuff.
I was going to say Logan Webb's whip. I was warning you about it already, but now you might have to be a little more hesitant.
Yeah, not thrilled on it. Like, trust me. I hope he proves me wrong. I will sit there and apologize to no end if he proves me wrong as a Giants fan. But taking the fantasy out of it, I don't see what they're doing right now. It's a 1-year deal, so that's fine. Fantasy wise, yes, it's really nothing. Burger overall really stinks though, because I'm with you. I was a Casey Schmidt guy. Like, he's cheap as heck. Like, he's still wearing around 33 or 34. He's still out there. I think he still would have been out there even if he hadn't. But we would have been much closer to taking him, I'll say that much, if he was going to be playing second base with that eligibility he had. So I was excited to check it out. I don't know if it's going to happen now. That's a big bummer. But we'll see. Still time for things to change in San Francisco. All right, last bit of news here. Austin Hayes signed a 1-year deal with the Chicago White Sox. Lefty mashing Austin Hayes. I'll get your thoughts before I say too much more, because I talked in the Discord quite a bit about this. But, A, this lineup looks really strong, actually, for a White Sox team that's never done anything, it feels like, for a long time. But Austin Hayes jumps in there. If Acuna plays center, it's even better. But how do you think this plays out? Is this any fantasy goodness to you? Because Austin Hayes, over the last 7 days in draft champions, ADP's 404.
I've been hesitant to draft Hayes because I didn't know if he was going to find a starting spot wherever he signed. But it looks like he will start for the White Sox, so I've missed out on that, which is fine. I mean, he's been nothing special. He also had, I think he's had injury issues as well, Hayes, over the last few years, so he hasn't been playing as much as he should have. He's just 30, so he's kind of we've seen his prime probably. But I was already kind of thinking that Lennon Sosa was going to be in the lineup, but I definitely think that's not going to happen now. And it's maybe hesitant to be in on Luis Angel Acuna because – so this is like, so I know we always say that roster resources isn't the end all be all, but it makes me think, because I don't know why Brooks Baldwin would play the outfield over some of these other guys.
Yeah.
And then I think I even brought the question up in the Discord. I said, well, is he their only center field eligible player? Like, is he the only guy in the roster that can play center, Brooks Baldwin? Because that's been like the reason why he's been in the lineup on roster resources the entire winter, where he's horrible, I think, as a hitter, at least. So I don't know if it's defense driven why he projects Baldwin to be in the outfield. So it makes me pause when I would go to draft Acuna, Sosa. I haven't drafted Lennon Sosa at all because I don't know if he's going to play like he did last year. So the Hayes just clogs it up between those three guys, and maybe it makes me question Caro, because sure, he's young, but he didn't really show a whole lot last year. But I think they want to have him and Teal switch every day, maybe. So it's just, it's kind of like the rest situation has kind of made it a little bit more messy for fantasy for certain guys. So I'd be okay with taking Hayes and like our fab leagues that are coming up, maybe more so in my 15s than a 12, but it's just, it makes it tough for me to want to draft Lennon Sosa or Luis Angel Acuña now, because I'm not sure how, because they both project for the bench right now, but I don't think they should. So that it's that uncertainty that makes me stay away.
Yeah, I think the Acuña thing, on paper, I think he'll be starting center field by opening day. It just depends if he really falls flat on his face. He's working through it, but he's never proven to do it. So that's probably one reason why Roster Resource doesn't have him on there. At least that's where my brain would go when I'm thinking about that. Baldwin, to me, is a fourth outfielder platoon guy. Like, if he really is the guy keeping certain some of these players out of, off the field, I'd be shocked. But again, you never know with these teams these days. I agree on the Lennon Sosa thing. I was a gigantic Lennon Sosa fan last year. Plenty of shares, especially in DCs. Zero shares this year because I have no idea where he's playing. Like, if he played every day again, I'd take him in a heartbeat, knowing he's got 20, 25 home run upside. Like, I think the skills are great. He's still really young, but they have blocked so many areas for him to play baseball this year. Like, they have found many ways to block Lennon Sosa from, like, how they haven't just traded him or somebody else to make room makes no sense. Like, his value is never going to be higher, it feels like. So, but again, what do I know? I'm sitting here talking on a microphone. But I agree for Austin Hayes to the original part of this. Deep leagues, he'll have plenty of viability. If he's playing every day, I've always been an Austin Hayes fan. He'll be really good if you're like in a 12, if you want to stream him when they're facing a bunch of lefties. But the fact he'll be playing every day is going to be big. And I'd be shocked if he doesn't play every day. So, yeah, I like Austin Hayes. I think it's a great landing spot for him. There's a lot of places he could have gone to and really lost any fantasy appeal. I think this is one of the places where he has more fantasy appeal than usual. So I'm on board with this one as well. All righty, let's get to the meat and potatoes of the show here. Let's get into building a draft roadmap. This is where Ryan and I built a hitting roadmap for PitchCon the other day, live for a Bubba and the Bloom show. That was more just like looking through ADP, looking at positions, kind of figuring out where we'd like to take people. That kind of goes into what we're doing now. Ben takes it to another level. Like, you really start mapping out your rounds, potentially positions, stats. We'll get to all that here very shortly. But like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Ben's been kind enough to, Ben and Martin Sokolsky both have been kind enough to contribute articles to the draft kit over on the Patreon. And one of Ben's first articles was building a draft roadmap. I believe we talked about this on last year's Bench with Bubba as well, at least after, you know, the drafts took place where you picked this main event team. And Ben's very smart, methodical, statistical sheets, you name it, he does it. He mentioned he's already building another workbook. And if you knew all the stuff he's going to do with that and the time spent to it, you'd understand while this roadmap takes place. But Ben, let's, before we kind of get into the nitty gritty here, what's the basics? Like, what are you trying to accomplish by having the roadmap? Because you're going to put this work in, you're going to build this thing, and then you're going to utilize it to draft. Like, what's the whole, I guess, purpose behind it before we dig into the kind of not so much step-by-step, but how we put it together?
Yeah, I guess it kind of has the same, serves the same purpose that people will say the DCs do, and it's kind of just like giving you reps. One thing I always say, like when I start doing DCs again each year, is that some of the decisions, I'm like, thank God I have 2 hours to make a decision right now, because I'm just getting back into the flow of thinking about, okay, you have to think like a couple rounds ahead. Okay, if I want to take this guy now, who may be available at this position later? I know it's a common thing where, like, when you and Ryan do your position previews, you go, okay, why draft this guy now when you can take this guy in this round? Same kind of thinking. And with the roadmap, it kind of just gives me time. There's no clock. I can utilize ADP, my rankings, projections, and just kind of sit there and with no pressure, just go, okay, in a perfect world, kind of how that's how where I start is like, in a perfect world, what do I want my team to look like based on my pick? Because luckily with the main event, which is what I do this for, and I will do a different degree of mapping for the auctions that I'm going to be in this month. And I think we're going to cover that maybe next week or a different show, is just kind of get a sense of what I want to do based on my pick. Because in the main event, that you get your KDS, which is for those not aware, it's how you kind of get your pick assigned to you. You kind of put your preference down. Okay, if do you want the first pick, if you have the option to get the first pick, or et cetera. And then you kind of use the knowing which picks you have, and then you can look at the ADPs and kind of get a sense of, okay, who might be available when it comes to this round and this pick. And then you can go back and look, okay, so I've already taken these guys, I think, and then will it make sense to go for this position or these stats? And it's just kind of, it's like a, I don't, it's like a mock draft, but it's with their stakes tied to it because you're going to hopefully repeat this when it actually comes time to your actual draft.
Yeah, no, you said, because at first you're talking about, yeah, people use DCs for it. I'm like, oh, so it's kind of like a mock draft. So I'm glad you said the quiet part out loud. But to your point, you know, some mock drafts people, like, you know, a lot of people are going to laugh at us for talking about mock drafts right now because that's a
faux pas. It's what it is, though. I'm mocking out main event when I do it.
I'm not opposed to them. I think whatever helps
you. I'm not talking, to people listening who would say
that. Oh, I know. Yeah, I'm down for whatever helps people prep for their best draft. Like, do whatever works for you. And sometimes mock drafts are great because they go so quick. You don't have to worry about things. And like you said, you can practice, like, where's this falling, so on and so forth. So that's basically what you're doing, but it makes sense because you're also then kind of using your, I guess, what are the odds that these guys are still here? Like, you're making your lists, you're checking it twice, all that kind of fun stuff. But when you're building these, like you said, it's the reps, it's the practice to get into it. 15s, 12s, folks, it doesn't matter. You can do it for all of them. I guess first off, like, different things, and we're just gonna kind of go a lot off the cuff here, but what ADP do you use? Because you're going fabs now, but like, say if you start prepping right now, there's not a lot of 15 team fab ADP available, so it's just DC. But as you and I know, some things will change, some won't, but some things will fluctuate. So, like, what ADP do you use, and how do you use the potential fluctuation to kind of adjust your roadmap?
So yeah, I mentioned I'll do this for my main events, and I believe they start drafting March 8th, and I usually wait a little bit to sign up for my first main event. So ideally, I will use the available main event ADP before my first main event. If I were to be in the first main event and there is no main event ADP, I'd probably just use the 15 team DC ADP. One thing I did last year actually was, out of curiosity, is I went back and referenced main event ADP, and I think I compared it to, so actually it would have been 2024's main event ADP. I compared it to 2025's DC ADP to see the difference between the pitchers. Cause you always, if anyone listens to any other podcast that talk NFBC, especially the main event, it's always discussed how the pitching gets pushed up. So I wanted to see how the DCs compared to the previous year's main events. And it wasn't a big difference, actually, in terms of number of pitchers as you went through the rounds, like cumulatively, how many were off the board. So that's one way to do it. If you were like to draft the first main events, maybe go back to last year's, and not maybe, and more get a sense of the positions, how they tend to go off the board. But I think if I had no main event ADP to go off, I just go off of DCs because it's the next best thing.
That's fair. When you're doing this, you mentioned it's reps, it's going through things. How much time does it take for you to put a roadmap together that when you finally walk away, you feel good with?
It's been 8 years since I've done one, but
it's probably roughly,
no more than an hour probably.
Okay. So it's like a standard.
Yeah, well, because to my point, like, I've done a bunch of DCs, so I know, well, not as many as you, but I've done enough. And so I have an idea
about you, no skin.
Well, yeah, it should be even quicker for you then. I've done a handful of DCs, so I kind of have an idea of how the drafts flow and where I like and don't like certain positions and stats. So it doesn't take too, honestly, it's more time consuming to go, like, filter out my workbook to get the right players up visible on my page, because I want to filter out, okay, who's going to be gone at this point in my draft, and we'll get into that a little bit.
All right, so then we've figured out what ADP we're using, how to use ADP. It's pretty much makes sense if you know how to use, pull up the ADP page. But now when you're building out your map, I guess I'll one question I think I had towards the bottom, but I'll bring it up now before we get into actually, like, picking players and whatnot. Do you plan out all 30 rounds, or do you go to a certain spot and you're like, okay, I know I have my statistical positional bases, now we go type thing?
No. So I'm looking at my main event roadmap from last year, 2025, right now, just as a reference. And I only go down for the first 23 rounds, which is the starting lineup for NFBC. But within the actual roadmaps themselves, my first main event, I only went 18 rounds deep, at least with players. And then like 19 and 20, I said I wanted starters for those two picks. For the second main event, I went 19 rounds deep. And then I went in rounds 20 and 21, I said, hey, I want starters. I didn't really care who. But then by the time I got to my third main event, I kind of stopped at round 11 with players, and I just went through positions. So like round 12, I wanted a utility player or a starter. Round 13, definitely wanted a starter. I wanted a catcher, maybe round 18 I put down, looks like. So I was more in depth in the first two main events. And then when I came to the third one, I'm like, yeah, I've done this a couple of times now. It's my last draft. I just wanted to get an idea for the core of my team, which is the first 10 rounds or so. And then from there, I'll just see what happens almost.
Now, if you were to build a roadmap like this, and it's basically an Excel sheet that's got names and targets and different things on it, we'll get to in a minute. And if you're on the Patreon, you can actually see the example from Main Event 3 on there. Do you think it would be acceptable to print this out and bring it with you to a draft table, or would that offend people that use Excel files?
No, actually, Bubba, I think I do print this out.
Oh, man, I'm so proud. This is great.
Because you know what I do is like, I remember doing this. So if I get who I want and that I've already like typed out, I'll circle them and then I'll also adjust. You said you have the article up, right?
Yeah.
Are the positions showing on the right hand side? Like they're just off.
Yeah. Like outfield, shortstop, third base. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I'll update that. So like if I didn't take Kyle Tucker, which I didn't in this draft, I did take Tucker. I took my outfielder, so that's set. But in round two, I did not take Trey Turner. I took Crochet instead, but I had a shortstop there. I would just like cross off the shortstop, say, okay, I took my SP now. And then one of my later SPs, I know, okay, I don't need to take an SP here necessarily because I already have one earlier. So then I can adjust from what my original plan was. So it's easier to do that once I already have it written out, I think. But I'm still referencing like my file in Excel as I'm drafting. This is like a separate thing, so I don't need another screen up. I can just have it in front of me and I can write notes or draw circles on it, whatever I want to do.
Yeah, I just had to make fun for a little bit there, because I am, as people know, I would have it printed out right and I'd have so many things written all over that piece of paper. I'd have a highlighter out. It'd be like, you know, back to high school back in the day before they had laptops. So it'd be good times. But yeah, I want to go back to some things you said there in a minute, but first I want to kind of, when you're building this map, okay, we're going through ADP, you know your KDS. So like on this sheet, Ben has like every pick 9, pick 22, like so you know what your pick's going to be each time. Thus, you can kind of reference ADP, what goes around that area is where we're going here. So how do you go about picking the positions? And I guess I'll combine it. Well, we'll start. How do you go about picking the positional needs for your teams? Because I know you said you do the reps, you know, the scarcity, so on and so forth. But like if people look at your roadmap, you like you said, you have outfield, shortstop. Like round three, you had third base, starting pitching, relief pitching, and obviously those are names you have written down there. But how do you go about that? Is just all the practice going through all the ADP, or is there a kind of a process to what you prefer type deal?
It could be a bunch of things. It could be just like who I like with the first round. It's a little more straightforward. Like you kind of know who's going to go off in what order more often than not. I think I put Carroll there just because if by chance he fell, I think I'd want him. For example, this is how I had this one main event mapped out. It comes down to builds I like in my DCs because I try to vary up my builds across. Well, actually, this year, I guess I'm doing 7 DCs. I don't really do like 6, but one's an auction DC, so it doesn't really count. But I save off my draft boards, and I actually referenced this earlier in the Patreon with the Discord. Someone was asking about third base, and so I can like I cut out the colorful draft boards we see on Twitter all the time, and I put them side by side so I can easily look at okay, where are my starters going across my DCs? Am I starting with an outfielder in the first round? Am I starting with a first baseman, shortstop, things like that, and then. I can look at, okay, which build did I kind of like best? Where do I want my closer based on ADP and cliffs? I don't make tiers, but in my head, I kind of realize, okay, there's going to be a drop off at this point in the draft for closers or catchers, for example, or even any other position like second base, for example, is very interesting this year. So it's just a combination of, okay, if I'm on the turn, for example, at 15, 16, I probably want to go Gunnar, Henderson, and Lindor, and then one of the outfielders because they kind of go in that range right now. And you need 5 outfielders in FBC, so it's good to create the first outfield one as early as possible, and then one of the elite shortstops. It's a great way to start. So it just kind of depends. And then the pitchers are tricky because the ADP can be so wild with the main events; they can move up so much. So it's that's really where you have to be ready to pivot. But in general, you can kind of be like, okay, do I want an ace in the first round, one of those aces, or do I want like the second tier? And then you probably know, okay, second, third round, I'm going to draft my SP1 then at that point. Or do you hammer out hitting three picks in a row, hitter, 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 and then maybe you go closer, then starter. And like I mentioned before, I did three main events last year. I'm gonna do three again this year. So I kind of want to vary it up a little bit across the three, kind of do like a DFS type mindset, maybe, just to maybe catch lightning in a bottle with the right build, kind of like what happened last year with my one. I got very lucky with that one. So it's just a mix of, okay, what's my pick? What have I done already? What do I like so far? And what I think will happen with the main event ADP.
No, it makes tons of sense to me. It's just, it's all about knowing the positions, the pivots that take place. Like statistically, obviously you're going to have more elite guys going forward. I guess my question would be for this, as you're going farther down, building your map and you're hopping around positions and say you're around 8, 9, 10, whatever. Do you start, as you're building your list of names, do you focus more so on statistics or positions, or is it kind of a mixture of both at that point?
Well, what I do is, so I have my tracker in my main workbook that I use. It has my rankings in it and projections, everything in there. So I'll take, so if I say I want Kyle Tucker in the first round, for example, like I did last year for this main event, I'll say, okay, he's my first round pick. And then he shows up in my projected stats. And then if I were to take Trey Turner like I wanted, okay, I'd say Trey Turner's my second pick. Then how his stats appear, his projected stats appear in my team. And then that will update towards my targets, which are typically like some sort of the 8th percentile. And so as I'm going through the draft and I'm mocking down, I'll say I'm mocking my draft and I'm imagining how it may go, it'll update my targets by remaining positions for stats. And then I can be like, okay, I'm probably going to need steals now. Maybe I take someone like Dylan Cruz or Jacob Marcy because I need some steals now, things like that. Or my average is low. I can't really take Willy Adames, even though he may project well in homers, runs, and RBIs, things like that. So it's because I do that in real time when I'm drafting. I write down who my picks are, and then I have the updated projections for my team. So just doing it when there's not a 1 minute clock, it just helps me to do it as when the real thing's happening.
No, and that's why I think that's one of the many perks to doing the map, is it gets you prepped to pivot. Like we kind of said, we'll do an auction one down the road here, and you gotta be able to pivot even faster. They were talking before the show, like in a snake, if you take a different pick or your target gets sniped, you might still have X amount of picks to take your time to figure it out. And auction, you might want a certain second baseman. He just got picked for more or bid on higher than you wanted, and your secondary option just got thrown out to bid. Like, are you jump? Like, where do you go? Like, you need to know right away on those things. So I think the map's even almost more important at that point. But this makes a ton of sense. Now I'll go back to what I wanted to ask earlier when you were talking about your example. If you took Tucker, but then you had like Trey Turner, a shortstop picked out, but on round two, you had Turner as your target. Let's talk about this. Yeah. So you have five names essentially on most rounds here. You have your target, you have your safe pick, you have your fallback pick, max pick, min pick. Is this a standard, just five names? Do you have a process for going through this? I guess kind of enlighten how you pick this, because one thing I was thinking, like, even it's only round three, but you already had the option for third base, SP, or RP. So you already had three positions potentially in play that early in the draft. So it wasn't like a locked in, I'm getting this position per se.
Right. Yeah. I never want to get too locked into a certain plan, because then if it goes wrong, then you don't have a backup plan. And it's not an auction we're discussing now, but it's the auction mindset of, and I was listening to a podcast with Mark Winokur on it. He's like, he had plan A, B, C, and D for an auction. And like he said, he was in plan C at some point. So a lot can change. If anyone who's drafted knows this can happen. But so you mentioned the max pick and the min pick. I stopped doing this, I think, last year because it was getting too restrictive for me. But what I would do is so one of the things NFBC ADP spits out is the max and the min pick for the time frame you select for each player, in addition to the average draft position. So I would filter on the max pick. So I would set the max pick column in my sheet to be less than or greater than or equal to my pick that I'm going to have. And then it's saying, okay, it's getting rid of all the people that have lasted that long. Because that's at that point, I'm saying, hey, they're probably not going to make it to me at this pick because they haven't yet. So then that's like my safe picks, because there's a chance that everyone else will make it to me based on what's happened so far. And then the min is even more restrictive, because then I'm filtering out by the min. So anybody who has gone before my pick, I'm getting rid of, because there's a chance that they will go before me. But then I think I wrote this in the article as well, is that eventually I realized that every draft, so my current draft will never have all those possibilities happen, because you can only jump ADP so often with so many guys, and only so many guys can fall past ADP. So instead, what I did last year was I just took plus or minus 10 picks from each of my picks, and I just listed off four names besides my target. So it made it easier for me, because some guys have massive pick ranges as you go farther down the board, and then they kind of just keep appearing when you do it that way. So it was good, like, process, I think, but it was just too restrictive for who was appearing for me in the past. So instead, I just do plus or minus 10 picks for each of my actual picks, and then that's kind of how I get my targets.
And you kind of mentioned it like a roundabout ways through this for your targets. When you first make your list, do you put your targets as if that's the team you're drafting, and then your next columns is the alternative plan, or do you go round by round with it? I guess I'm trying to say, do you start out by filling out all your targets? Like, hey, this is the team I'd like to leave with, and then here's my pivots if it doesn't happen.
I think I do a complete round at a time.
Okay, so I was wondering.
Yeah, I think that's how I typically do it. Perfect. So I don't have to go back and then redo all the ADPs again.
And for those wondering, I have read the article. It's just for called podcasting, to let everybody have try to ask questions the listeners might be curious about.
I made the joke to Bubba that I said, did you pull a Ryan and not read my article? Because yeah. The joke was that Ryan never would read Bubba's updates last year.
Yeah, never read them ever. But it's just interesting to me, because like I always say, I need to keep improving on my, like, when I sit down at the table, I need to be prepped for even more prepped. I do enough stuff where I feel confident about the pool, but just having everything right there in front of you, I think goes a long, long ways. Now, when we're talking hitters, we're talking pitchers, obviously, that I'm not gonna speak for you, but I'll ask briefly here, deciding hitters, pitchers, like, do you walk into a room with a specific strategy? Like, you know, Toby was always pocket aces, and then there's other things, or do you walk in going, hey, I'm going to just map this out based on what ADP is, and as things fall, like you took Crochet in round two, but I think that was your only Crochet share. You originally didn't want to take Crochet there. You wanted, like, based on your map, you didn't really have a pitcher in line to like round four or five. So is that like a plan, or is it just kind of the way the ADP breaks down?
I think this is more of a plan last year, because I'm looking at my three main events. My first main event, I wanted Wheeler in the second round. I ended up getting Wheeler in the second round in that main event, so it was good and bad. But then in main event two and three, to your point, I didn't really target a pitcher until the fifth round in both of them. And I think because when I was doing my DCs, I loved the start with the hitters, and then I was a big fan of the late five, six, seven round starters, because if you look at the list of the guys I had, it was like Framber Valdez, Spencer Schwellenbach, Michael King, Pablo Lopez, Bybee, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, Shota Monaga, Freed, Peralta, Nola, Webb. So not all those guys hit last year, but some of them did. And that's what happens every year. Some guys just don't perform like we think, and then other guys do just fine. So I like those ranges of like getting like three SP2s was my kind of like my plan. And by doing that, maybe one of them hits, and then I get, in the case of the main event three, is hopefully I get three hitters that are going to just return value. And then I was looking for a closer, and then I get my three SPs, and then I'm good to go. And then I'm pretty balanced at that point. So I always try to I kind of look at the first seven rounds whenever I do my mapping, and I always try to get like the same balance after this first seven rounds. That's pick 105 and 15. So after the first 100 picks, how do I want my team to look? How do I want my base? And then I kind of get a little more flexible once as I go through the draft.
No, it makes sense to me, and especially staring at it helps out a lot. But it's interesting that it's basically starting at like round four-ish. You have your relievers, like we said, then round five and beyond, almost every target in all those pockets, as you read a lot of them off, it's almost all pitching, like all pitching. Like you made a cognizant effort of, if things go the way I want an outfield, a shortstop, and hopefully like a third baseman, and then I'm going pitching heavy for four rounds. That's what it came down to get back on track. But that gives you that solid hitting base, then it locks in some good pitching to then be able to come back and make some damage take place. Let's talk pivots here, a couple different things. First off, I want to know, So, like, you have your mins, you have your maxes, you have your targets. Obviously, you'll be in certain drafts and certain players will fall. And you're like, okay, this is interesting. So, say you have you got your target, but then you still have your four guys on your min and max list. And all of a sudden, it's your pick again. And one of those guys is available now. Do you take one of them or do you stick to, like, your round three plan per se? And then, like, so, like, that's what I'm saying. Does that pivoting take place for you?
It does. So you might appreciate this. So if we're looking at the main event three, my last option in round six was Junior Caminero. I think he was my seventh round pick for this main event. So he was still there and I ended up pulling him up but I ended up going back to those players I identified because, for example, like in round six, and this one was Bybee, Ryan, Ober. If I got Bybee, for example, and then Joel Ryan was there for my next pick, I'm taking him. I'm not, because because based on ADP and it's not just ADP, but it's also how they compare to my rankings. So ultimately, my rankings is what I want to go off of. And then I kind of use the ADP as like a guide of, okay, where can I pick this guy probably and safely get him, essentially. I always say ADP doesn't tell me where I should draft someone. It tells me when I have to draft someone almost. Or it's not telling me when I should make a pick, but it's telling me when to make a pick if I want to. Yeah. That makes sense. So yeah, I will go and I will reach from the other players from a previous round that I may not have taken, but are still there to answer your question. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's why I want to clarify that for anybody that is either read the column or just curious. Like, it makes sense to me. Like, hey, if this guy fell, like, yes, he should still be at the top of my list in all things considered. But some people are just like, could be structured, like, or at least thinking, hey, this is the program. We're sticking to the program here. Like, we're following my point being is it's not a locked in map. Like, there's shortcuts or detours that can be taken on this roadmap if it's something you need. What other type of pivots can we look at though? Cause say, like you said, you wanted to get Trey Turner in round two, you ended up getting Crochet. But now how does that affect going forward? Because, like, you don't really have a shortstop target until Willie Adames, which is a safe pick in round eight. Like, do you start moving pieces around in, like, a previous part of the map, or do you stick to the map you have knowing that, hey, shortstop's a tough position. It dries up. It's top-heavy, but it disappears. I have an ace, so maybe rounds four through seven I don't need to go as pitching-heavy. Like, how do you pivot that situation maybe?
Yeah, well, of course, I'm not going to have time to actually go back through during the draft and be like, okay, now I took Turner, or I didn't take Turner. Who do I actually want to take now, or vice versa? I just have to look back on those DCs and be like, okay, because when I do my DCs, I don't have a plan at all, really. I might be like, okay, well, I want to take this guy because I don't have him yet, or I might have an idea of when I want to target my closers and catchers because that's pretty important to me when I do my mapping. Closers and catchers is kind of how I start. So it's just more of like this. I've been drafting fantasy leagues for years now, and I'm just kind of used to knowing the player pool, how I like the players, how my rankings are set up. And then I'm comfortable with just going from like the seat of my pants, I guess. It's like, cause I will try going back to my targets if I can, but I know at some point I might just have to draft. And at least by writing this out, I know in my mind who I like. So that as my picks come up, I don't necessarily have to look at the sheet. Like, I've already gone through and planned stuff out, and I kind of have an idea of, okay, I prefer this guy to this guy. I may not need this guy though at that time, but if I do, okay, I can go here. So it's just being able to make those decisions after doing all those DCs and just playing it out. Cause when I have a clean slate before I go into doing my roadmap, I could go in any direction theoretically with how I want my draft to go. So I have to consider, okay, do I really want to go in SP here? Cause there have been times where I'll like delete what I've done and be like, I don't like the way this looks. The projections are coming out bad. And then I'll just redo it. And I don't mind doing that if I have to.
No, makes a ton of sense to me. As you're going through the draft again, like you said, by draft three, you only went really through round 11. Sometimes you go through 23. When you first get going, but you start learning the pool, makes total sense. Anything else in the first 23 are you focused on? And you also said you usually map 23 because that's your starting roster. But as we know in a fab league, you could actually technically not have your starting roster filled in the first 23. Do you change things as, again, probably I know the answer, but I'm going to ask anyways. As players fall, does that change your approach to that situation, I guess?
Yeah, but the players that fall are always dangerous because there's probably a reason why they are falling, especially in a main event room. But I will say, though, that in my first main event last year, Robert Suarez and Pete Fairbanks both fell a lot, and I ended up taking them, and it worked out great for me with saves. So at a certain point, you have to be like, okay, I think the value's fine now. Even though I may not like these guys, I think they're still worthy of being drafted at this point. And then so it could be dangerous because there's a reason why you're low on someone and why the room is low on someone. But there's also the chance that the room's wrong, like with the case of Robert Suarez last year. And it really comes down to how comfortable you are with making that pick in case it does kind of throw off your roadmap.
With your roadmap, you have your safe pick, you got your target, you have your safe pick, you have your fallback. Have you ever thought about making a column for just like upside pick, like shoot the moon pick?
Probably not, because I think I would just include them in there and I would just know that they're that kind of player already. And then if, depending on how safe or not safe my team is, or it seems like my team is going into that pick, I may make that call, but I think I just know in the back of my mind kind of who would fit that description.
Now, you've kind of answered this earlier, but you mentioned you have your tracker out there and you got your other files up and everything. So as you're going through the map, you're making your pick, you're tracking your picks. When do you start pivoting, like statistically, I guess, when you start looking at your tracker to like realizing, okay, I didn't get it as my targets didn't go as planned. I made pivots. I had to do certain things, but now in doing so, like projection wise, I might be falling here and here. Like, how do you start pivoting in that direction? Just local like experience from drafting so much, or like basically are they off the sheet and you're starting to throw names onto the sheet in theory?
Yeah. Like if I need steals, for example, then I'll just go for someone that I know projects well for steals, even though I haven't written them down on the roadmap at all. Yeah. I don't have a problem doing that as long as I like the player. Like steals are always tricky because I don't want to I don't want to target them too much because then I think I'm going to lose ground in the other three categories for sure in hitting, not including average. And but like for power too, like I may end up taking a power guy that I don't want to be in a case where I'm taking a power guy that I don't really want to take because maybe he has bad average or is a platoon bad or hits low in the lineup, for example. I'd rather pivot for the steals guys, I think, than anything, because they're more easily replaceable in fab, I think.
Agreed. So when you finish 23 rounds, say you mapped out 23 rounds, now we have your 7 rounds of reserves. Obviously, you don't build a roadmap for reserves. You could, I guess, technically, but you don't. Is that more of a, again, you're just looking at team needs at the time, like your tracker, I'm going to fill these spots. I know you've done mains a lot, like, and that's the reserves in a main and reserves in a 12 are completely different animals. So how do you kind of go about building your reserve picks without mapping them out, I guess, for the listeners out there?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward for me. So I want the opposite of my MI and CI. So my middle infield utility, I want the opposite eligibility. I guess if my MI is second and short, then I can do whatever I want with my other middle infielder. Same thing with corner infielder. If they're first and third eligible, I have a little more freedom with that fourth corner infielder. I want 6 outfielders, at least one on the bench, but also that's not including my util could be my 6th outfielder or my 4th corner or my 4th middle. And then that leaves 2 hitters on my bench because I'm only drafting. So I guess we'll say 8 bench. If we say the utility is like a bench spot, so I want one of my outfielders, my last CI or MI to be my utility. Then I have the other 2 are on my bench. So at least 5 bench spots. And I've learned that I just want to get as many starters as possible to see who hits. So I'm just going after the highest upside arms probably. Like last year I was big on Hayden Wesneski. Who else? I remember I had Wesneski on a couple teams. I don't know if I drafted Stroka or not, but guys like that who maybe through a trade or something like they look good in the spring. They're going later. Sure, it's because it's a 15. You don't really want to be fabbing too much, but it's going to happen. I've learned. So just go for the upside with those later arms and see if you can hit a lottery ticket.
Yeah, I'd rather not have to fab in 15s as much as possible because that is a tough world to live in. What other guys pointers can you give to the listeners out there for building the map? Because it might sound like something so simple for people, but I think it's a great way to game plan. You can do all the reps you want, but to, like, sit there and actually work through it. Like when I was in school, like I could sit and listen to a lecture and I didn't retain much. I had to always write stuff down to learn. That's like the joke. Like one reason I still write stuff down. That's how I taught myself. I was really good at math because I was always writing stuff down. Like that's how but if you took me to a philosophy class, I was reading, like it was a lost cause. So like what other tips or advice could you give listeners here to get the most prep, I guess, out of building the roadmap?
Well, I think one of the things I said when we reviewed my main event that we've kind of been focusing on here for the map is that it didn't go as planned necessarily. Like I did draft some guys like Tucker and Machado, but there were a lot of guys I didn't get, and luckily I didn't. Like I missed out on Bybee, thank God. I didn't get Iglesias, my closer. I got Munoz, who was actually my fallback, thank God. So even if you do plan it out, don't be afraid to not follow it, or if it doesn't end up looking like you do. Like if your actual draft doesn't look like your roadmap at the end, doesn't mean you did anything wrong. Because a lot of the picks I've identified here ended up not being that good anyway. Like Christian Walker kind of was a bust. Austin Wells wasn't worth that high price. I mentioned the other guys who I kind of identified that I wanted as a target, but ended up not working out. So you never know what's going to happen. And then even like my other main event, I know there's been other times too, like where I kind of hit the build and it just doesn't work out. So it's just like another rep, and it's getting you thinking about the decisions that you're going to have to make during the draft pool when there's no pressure. So if you don't get it right, or if you don't go as, that doesn't go as planned, doesn't mean it's a bad draft.
No, that's a great point. Cause yeah, you can pencil it out, but there's going to be pivots no matter. Like if you walk out literally drafting the team you put down on paper, I'd question the team I put down on paper probably, because that means no one else wanted any of those. Like that should be kind of alarming to pull off. And it's also like if projections were always 100% accurate, we'd be pretty good at this game. So like you're building these guys, you're using your trackers, you're doing this and that. But in the end, especially like, you say, Ryan says, a lot of people say in the 15s, you're going to have a hole somewhere. So it just depends on how you prevented holes elsewhere throughout the draft. But like listening to you do talk about your process in this, I think to me, the biggest thing I would be focused on, and again, doing all the DCs, doing the shows and everything, it helps me a lot. But, really have your pivots figured out, because that's, I think, where it's going to take place. Because we can all walk through 15 and pick bunches and be like, yeah, I want this guy, I want this guy, I want this guy. That's fine. But then start looking at, like, what are my other options? What am I good drafting here to continue to go with? And I think that goes a long ways. And that's where it's like when we talked even the news, like, I don't have a share of this guy, but now I'd be interested in this guy. So like those things change as the off season changes and as we get closer and closer to, actually doing this drafting thing for real. Because I think you have you done your DC auction? You haven't done that yet, have you?
No, it's weird. So you mentioned my listener league is on the 15th, and then the weekend after is my DC auction.
Oh Jesus!
So I have to go back to DCs. So it's gonna be a weird string of drafts for me.
on the bright side, though, is your DC is a DC auction, so you still have to draft your starting 23 theory. So, but it's,
I can't fully cut ties with the DC mine until after that draft.
Yeah, okay. So I was wondering where you're sitting on that one. And then, so that'll be towards the end of February, which means when's your first fab scheduled?
I'm going to the Godfather Games in March 14th. March. So my first draft is March 14th in New Jersey.
It goes the week before Vegas. Okay. So you do March 14th, then you'll do a couple online ones. Strictly 15s, no 12s, right?
Just my home league will be a 12, and that's
But like you're not doing any season.
No NFBC 12s, no.
No Champions League for you. Gotcha. Okay. I don't blame you. It was not a judgy comment. I was just making sure, because that feels like a lot of lifelong 15 people have jumped in the OCs just for the Champions League part of it, and most aren't happy about having to do that. But
the fab is very the two different fab mindsets, I think, is like the biggest issue probably.
It's crazy, but people know we talk about that religiously.
Yep, I know very well how crazy it can be.
I literally, we'll click on it and it's like, what? Like zero sense whatsoever. But all right, I don't have a whole lot else to ask. I think it's pretty straightforward for the most part, but I wanted to walk through the process for those out there that are, and people, just to clarify, this doesn't have to be for NFBC only. This is for any draft you do. You can pick any form of ADP. Most websites will have some kind of ADP / ranking. Like, you're on Yahoo. What would you, if you were doing a Yahoo roadmap, Ben, what would you utilize for that?
Yeah, unfortunately, Yahoo doesn't have a great export for their ADP. I would probably just use OC. But the problem is that Yahoo is one catcher, and and OCs are two catcher. Also, two, the pitch of the relievers even go, or the closers even go higher in OCs than they do in Yahoo leagues. So let me, I actually reopened my Yahoo, my league. Let me see what the ADP says. I don't, like, you could maybe copy the ADP that's shown there, but you might have to do it like a bunch of times. I don't know. It does show 28 players at a time. Maybe you can copy it and then build it out manually. I mean, that'd be really, but you don't have to go as far into the player pool on Yahoo because it's a much smaller league size. So it might take a little bit of work. I don't know if another, like, Fantasy Pros would have that.
What I was going to suggest, yeah, Fantasy Pros has some really cool, you can literally customize whatever kind of mock draft you want to do, and that you could use this. It's their mock draft software. It could be you, and then they literally just, it's like, say it's 12, it's 11 other computers. Like, not, it's basically AI is what it comes down to. And they just use ADP, and they don't always pick best available, but they use some strategy to it. But at least it gives you an idea of where the flow is, if that makes sense. And you can do stuff like that. You can save them, because when I used to do articles for them, I used to run those, and then I'd have to, like, from picks 5 in a 12 team, this is what my team was, and I had to explain, like, what went around me and my thought process and that kind of deal. So, yeah.
So this is not, well, it's kind of related. So for when I do my fantasy basketball prep, I use Fantasy Pros to get, like, a player pool. I do their download. And I think one of the options is you could do ADP instead of projections. I'm not sure, though. It's worth, if you do want to try to get something that you can print out into Excel for, like, Yahoo, I think it's worth trying to look at Fantasy Pros. Yep.
Fantasy Pros has a lot of options. I bet other places do, too. I haven't really checked too much because I primarily play NFBC now, but I know it's not for everybody. So there are other options out there. If you have questions, let us know. But Ben, I think I'll wrap it up there. That was good. Get a little strategy talk to get things going. We'll have more of that this offseason before we start ramping up more player talks. But if you want plenty of player talks, just join me and Ryan. It's all we do right now. So we'll got you covered over there. But any final thoughts, Ben, as we wrap this one up, head out on another week, first week of February. It's already February, for crying out loud. January's gone. It's 2020. It sucks. It's flying by.
I think a week from tomorrow, based on when we're recording, is when pitchers and catchers start reporting. February 10th, I believe.
You are correct. For some teams. I saw some pictures of teams, like, loading up the trucks to drive out to.
I used to love that when I was a kid, like, seeing, like, the trucks load up and go down. I'm like, yes, it's almost here. And then,
yeah. Yeah, saw that. So it's happening. But pretty soon. Like, literally, I have MLB Network on as we're recording. The Caribbean Series is on, Mexico versus Panama. So I'm actually watching baseball, which is.
Yeah, I hadn't looked till just now, but yeah, I see it. Yep.
Yep. So. All right, we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back with you guys coming up hopefully next week, barring my schedule of fun. We'll work on something there. But to make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. You can check out his work over on the Patreon. And if you want to check that out, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric. But for now, Bench with Bubba, episode 825. Catch y'all next time.